From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of April 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons will be here to take up the agricultural cash grain segment. Along the way, we'll check in on the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, and we'll hear all about the agricultural energies with Harry Cooney from GrowMark out of Bloomington. And it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Kurt Kimmel is now here to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us. Lots of news over the weekend as the administration was talking about NAFTA and tying it to not only what happens at the border and our border, but the Mexican border on its south end as well. And then, of course, the Chinese announcing that they were going to go ahead and implement what they said they would on 128 different products, including pork. The Dow Jones Industrial Average didn't like it very much. It's down what there was around 700 points. You've got real-time quotes there. Where do we stand at this point?
Yeah, not any better. We're down 715. The NASDAQ down 78. So definitely investor confidence has gone to the sidelines here, and that's kind of a keep a lid on commodities in general. You thought maybe some exiting of the indexes would go into commodities. It has for the gold and silver. But for as far as safe haven goes, but not beans or pork or cattle or energies whatsoever. But a lot of moving parts. Our trade deficit with China is running about $375 billion a year, just way out of line. So the Trump administration is stepping in, and of course they imposed $50 to $60 billion on China's products. China's come back with about $3 to $5 billion, but it was enough to send signals that maybe, you know, this thing could escalate a little bit more. As far as Mexico and Canada goes, there might be some border agreements there forthcoming, and we'll see how that unfolds. But definitely, anybody that's looked at past trade wars or trade issues, has experienced a little bit of pain and uncertainty, and the market's reflecting that here, starting out the month of April here. Technically, not a very good day. We did follow through but failed at some areas there on the charts. We have a daily, weekly, monthly reversals, you know, that could unfold here if this thing would continue to drift lower here over the near term. So it's kind of a warning signal here. The new crop November beans did top out last night at 1060 on some fairly good volume. Failed to stay above that 1050 area. So for those who are looking for a spot, this 1050 to 1060 is still a spot to maybe get caught up to where you need to be on those, Todd.
Yeah, so we have talked about that quite a bit, and I know tomorrow I'll be traveling as long as it doesn't look like the snow is going to keep me from making a run towards Fargo, North Dakota, though I think that's debatable at this time. I talked earlier in the day to Todd Hubbs. You'll hear this tomorrow. But the ending stocks number, based off the grain stocks figures and the acreage numbers that came out from USDA Thursday, while the acreage numbers were really low, what, 89 million for soybeans, the ending stocks number, when you figure it forward, and we won't see anything from USDA until May officially, still puts it probably at about where it is for the current marketing year. So that's a pretty good sized number. And as you said, a higher high today turned around and dropped lower. That could set things up kind of ugly, I suppose. Did the trade react to that, or were they worried about China today in particular? Do you know?
I think it's just a combination of all the above there. Especially even keep an eyeball on soybean meal. They sold the meal and bought back the short oil position today, unwinding that spread. and the meal movement, you know, could be an issue. So, you know, we had a good run. We topped out, took out last year's highs in the November futures contract where we were a year ago. We topped out around that 1047, just failed to follow through there. But we got some acreage numbers to work with. I think weather-wise, we stay wet in through here. There's an issue of getting corn in the ground. We could see some switching to beans as we move forward in through there, and I think that was a little bit of a factor. But the bottom line, like you mentioned there, we're close to where we were a year ago. If you do the math on it, it just depends what type of yield we put on this crop. You know, beans around this 48, 49 bushels to the acre is going to be around 520 million bushels. Each analyst is going to spend their demand picture scenario there, so we'll see how that unfolds. But probably the big thing, and corn reflected it there last Thursday after those numbers released. You come in here with 88 million acres, whether you put a 74 or 71 bushel yield on it, you know, we're quickly down to this 1.5, and that's a market maker. So trade's probably going to continue to buy corn, sell beans on the spread here for a while.
Turn your attention to the pork for just a second. Last week, and we have not yet talked about this, there was a report out. Do you have an idea, if you can look it back up and tell me what that had to say? And then did that play today, or was it just the Chinese intent to put the actual tariff on pork that put the squealies on that market for the day?
Yeah, the hog and pig report is about as expected, 3% more. We're looking at some fairly good hog numbers coming at us here as we go into this spring and summer. But the fact that they upped the pork frozen pork tariff up over to 25% was kind of an issue. Asia, particularly, not only China, but Japan and the Koreans and so forth, are large importers of our meat in general. Now, the key is going to be the outright pork we bring in from outside sources other than the Smithfield purchase in 2013. It's hard for me to believe they're going to put a tariff on their own pork they're importing from the U.S.
Depends on whether they've got enough of it. I think, right, whether they've got enough of that intellectual property moved into their system where they can maybe think about protecting their own pork production, I would suppose. What do you think?
Yeah, no.
You called it the great pork robbery. That could be it, right?
The great pork robbery. 13's finally hitting the news wire. But the thing is, they're right now transforming from small pork producer to larger pork operations, and they're in a situation now where they've got some short-term ample supplies. So we could be running into an issue. Right now it's an issue, but later on they'll lift that as they need to move more pork in. Same thing on the ethanol. We've had a import tariff on our ethanol going into their country. They upped that here a little bit. But as time goes on through here, if they're going to truly go to that 10% blend by 2020, the math does not pencil out. They'll have to lift that ethanol tariff somewhat to get ethanol into the country to meet those standards.
It's always good to talk with you. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very good. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. economy, and particularly its agricultural sector, will soon feel some of the first effects of retaliation against President Donald Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs after China announced yesterday it would be levying duties on 128 different U.S. products beginning today. The move, reports Politico, comes just over a week after Beijing unveiled the list of products, which is valued at about $3 billion, that it was considering targeting with tariffs if the two countries were unable to resolve the issue via dialogue at the World Trade Organization, or the WTO. China will impose a 15% tariff increase on goods including American fruit and nuts, and a 25% tariff on pork, recycled aluminum, and other goods. China's new tariffs are all but certain, says Politico, to further escalate tensions between the two economic giants, leading many to worry that American farmers in particular could become casual casualties in what's been a tit-for-tat trade war, and given that today's duties are meant in response specifically to Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs, it's also quite possible Beijing could unveil more retaliatory measures in the coming weeks in response to separate restrictions levied in response to China's intellectual property practices. We'll stay with trade and the president, but switch to NAFTA. Trump took to Twitter yesterday in an attack on the United States' southern neighbor, Mexico, warning that a failure to secure an adequate immigration deal could lead him to withdraw the United States from NAFTA. Mr. Trump's threat is far from new, though it is interesting to see him unleash such harsh words on the same weekend that the three NAFTA parties have been hoping to conclude a deal, Canada, Mexico, and the United States, had set an informal deadline of wrapping up negotiations by the end of March, though that date passed on Saturday with little acknowledgement that the talks remain far from over. Officials had signaled at the end of the previous round in Mexico City last month there would be an eighth round of negotiations held in Washington next week. But USTR has yet to issue any formal guidance or confirm that that is still the case. And finally, one more trade item, this one on TPA, or Trade Promotional Authority Renewal. Anyone who remembers the 2015 fight over Trade Promotion Authority knows how controversial the legislation is, especially with Democrats. But even though the law technically expires at the end of June, the decks are stacked in favor of renewal of the fast-track process for trade deals for another 3 years. Here's how the Senate Finance Committee report of the 2015 law described the process. Consistent with prior law, the president's request for an extension to July 1st of 2021 will be granted unless either House of Congress passes a resolution of disapproval. The report language specifies that any resolution of disapproval must go through the Finance Committee in the Senate and the Ways and Means and Rules Committees in the House. It also notes the floor action on such resolutions will not be in order unless the resolution is reported by the aforementioned committees. So, only one chamber has to pass a resolution of disapproval to strip Mr. Trump of his ability to submit trade deals to Congress for a straight-up or down vote without any amendments, but it has to get past two key Republicans, Finance Chairman Orrin Hatch and House Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady, to get to the floor for a vote. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. On Tuesdays, we generally check in with the agricultural energy specialist, including Harry Cooney at GrowMark. However, I'll be traveling tomorrow, so today we're going to talk with Harry instead on this Monday afternoon. Hey, Harry, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, yes, sir. Coming out of a three-day holiday weekend in the markets and things, and have some weather around that's affecting some things here, and so we're getting back into the first week in the month of April.
Well, let's talk about this, because we've had snowstorms on April 1st. We had a snowstorm the last full week end of March, and it's staying cold across the bulk of the United States. How does that impact the energy markets?
Well, in a big way, it's the demand for propane and the heating fuels. I mean, you know, Grandma, over the Easter break, Grandma said she still had on her furnace. So, you know, we're still using heating fuels, and the main one that we sell is propane. Propane demand continues strong. It has been strong the last several weeks, a little stronger than it was a year ago. And so with this stronger demand, we're drawing down stocks just a little bit more than we anticipated. Normally about this time of the year, you would start to bottom out the stocks and start the slow build process out into summer. So we still have very adequate stocks of propane, but we are under last year now, and we're under the five-year average in the stocks of propane.
You know, one of the things I seem to recall, and maybe you can help me out, is that propane has to be moved into place, so that it has to move from where it's produced to where it might be used. Do we have problems at the moment because of the lengthening part of the wintertime of out-of-place stocks at all?
No, demand is not that strong. I mean, demand is good, but it's not burdensome where your pipelines can't keep up or things like that. Now, back in January, we had some of that action, but no, at this time, it's very manageable. It's just going to draw stocks down a little bit more than we anticipated, and some years even, we can continue to draw propane stocks down into late April. And boy, this could be one of those years.
You mentioned that stocks were still pretty plentiful. Do you see any problems by the time we get to the fall when producers will need propane to dry down grain?
No, I don't. And here's the thing. That's the job of the market. The job of the market is to ration that supply and demand. And when I use the word ration, that almost sounds scary, but it's not that tight at all. And we will have to watch over the summer to see how our build numbers, the build of stocks in propane are throughout the summer and into the early fall. But as of now, I don't think there's any reason to be concerned about a shortage of stocks or anything like that.
No, that is indeed good news to go along with the chilly weather. Hey, thanks so much.
Oh, that's right. Stay warm.
You too. That, of course, is Harry Cooney. He is with Growmark. Brian Stark is now here from the Andersons to take a look at the agricultural cash grains segment. Thanks for being with us. First, your quick assessment of last week's reports and then the impact it's had, if any, on basis.
I think the biggest thing, obviously, acreage has had a bigger impact on the future side of things, coming in surprisingly low, specifically on soybeans. I think, obviously, principal crop acres being down 1.2 million and not a lot of direction as to where those are in the prospective plans report causes a little bit of pause as we head towards the spring planting season and into the final report in June. But I think basis, obviously, will be dictated by movement as long as the weather maintains its, unusual pattern for this time of the year, cold and wet. Movement may continue to be decent into the end user, which should depress basis. But as soon as the farmers can get into the field to start planting, I suspect that basis will start to firm some for both corn and beans.
And by how much would you think that would happen?
I would think from this standpoint, you're probably looking at a potential nickel to 8 cents on either commodity to generate movement here once guys get in the field, because I don't think the end user has got much deferred coverage on today. I think they've been living in the spot market hand to mouth for the last 6 to 8 months. So I think basis should show some rapid improvement once people get busy planting in the field.
Should farmers be shaken by today's movement in the soybeans with the higher high and the lower lows?
I think the bean market causes someone to pay attention. I talked a little bit about this on Commodity Week last week after the report was released. But again, there's a chance that you may see more bean acres when we get to the June report. And given the amount of carryout we're looking and projecting going into fall, it's going to be hard, in my opinion, for the beans to maintain an upper $10 price. So I think sell and defend is still the right approach for beans, and guys need to look at making sales when we have opportunities around that 10-50 mark.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn tonight, we are 370. New crop corn out of the field is 391. Cash soybeans are 1010. New crop beans also 1010 out of the field. And July wheat is 458.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Brian Stark. He is with the Andersons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. It's the second day of April. Nature fooled us yesterday. Mark Russo is here to tell us how and why. I had nearly 6 inches of snow in the Urbana-Champaign area yesterday, Mark. Unbelievable that happened.
Well, actually, it comes down to, or one of the primary reasons comes down to, the splitting up of the polar vortex back almost 2 months ago. During the middle part of February, we saw a complete breakdown of the polar vortex, what we call a strong stratospheric warming event, and that has long-term implications as to forcing cold air into the middle latitudes for an extended period of time. and we're still having that influence not only here in the U.S., but we've also seen it in recent weeks across other areas of mid latitude, such as Europe, and that's going to continue at least here in North America for at least a couple of weeks. So while we are, from a calendar standpoint, truly in spring, the weather is still going to feel very wintry-like, especially here in the Corn Belt.
Does this mean, when you said split, that there is an area at the top of the world near the North Pole that is warmer than usual?
Yeah, that is certainly the case here, and we see that not only at the surface, but also up into the stratosphere. And actually, that warmth in the stratosphere, where the polar vortex is located, that's where we saw some initial warming, very warm temperatures basis normal, and now that's descended down to the surface. So the Arctic is unusually warm. We've seen that actually a higher frequency of that here lately, but that's part of this process here where you have warmth at the surface of the Arctic, but also up in the stratosphere.
You also said this has longer-term impact. Do you expect April to be cold, and will we get more snow in the Midwest?
Yeah, we see that especially over the next couple of weeks and really the next 10 days specifically. And with this pattern, it's not all of the U.S., but certainly the northern half or so, including the Corn Belt, also Northern Plains, Delta, Northern Deltas included in that as well. But south of there, pretty tight temperature gradient. Seeing warmer temperatures here at the Gulf Coast, also into the Southern Plains and Southwest, and it's that tight temperature gradient that's producing a very strong jet stream and also continuation of very active conditions, of which some of the precipitation is in the form of snow.
What does that mean over the hard red winter wheat growing regions?
Well, with this jet stream being strong, it's pretty progressive, meaning these systems or waves coming through are moving through very fast, so they're not able to produce any kind of significant precip in some of the driest areas of the Southern Plains. But as they work their way into the Eastern Plains and more so in the Delta and Midwest, able to generate more precipitation. And so still there is concern for portions of the hard red belt, especially southwest Kansas down through the Texas Panhandle, which has been the driest the longest.
Does the tight temperature gradient tell me that it's going to stay cooler than normal and drier than normal then too?
For across the Southern Plains hard red belt, actually a bit more temperature variability here. Now, the next 4 to 5 days is biased on the cooler side, but we are going to see temperatures warm up next week across that region. But again, as you go north of there into the central and northern plains and then into the Corn Belt, that's where temperatures will consistently be below normal for the next 2 weeks. And especially that is the case here from now through the upcoming weekend, where temperatures are as much as 20, even in some cases of the northern plains, 24, 25 degrees colder than normal.
Any important updates on the growing regions in South America?
At this late stage of the growing season, there is some improved rainfall across areas of Argentina. We saw that this weekend with one rain opportunity, but we're also seeing that upcoming this weekend and into the early part of next week with another rain opportunity that looks to cover about 2/3 of the Argentina corn and soybean belt, something that the belt has actually not seen. You have to go back to January. So certainly some better rains there here for the early part of April, but it's debatable whether they will make any difference at this late stage of the season.
Mark, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
You're welcome, Todd. My pleasure.
And that, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.